ओके नमस्ते एंड हरिओम। दिस इज योर होस्ट किशोर त्रिवेदी वेलकमिंग यू टू दिस एपिसोड ऑफ ऑल अबाउट धर्मा रेडियो प्रोग्राम ऑन रेडियो नायरा। एज यू नो दिस इज पार्ट ऑफ नो योर धर्मा इनिशिएटिव ऑफ द हिंदू सोसाइटी ऑफ नॉर्थ कैरोलाइना एंड ऑल द पास्ट रिकॉर्डिंग्स कैन बी फाउंड अंडर द KYD टैब ऑफ hsnctemple.org वेब पेज। Today, I'm very happy to welcome our guest, Anagha or Anu, who is an electrical engineer and a former hardware chip designer, a mom of two teens, a yoga teacher, and currently an MBA student in the Kenan Flagler Business School at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. So Anagha, how about explaining the meaning of your name and bringing in at least one of the verses from Bhagavad Gita?
Sure. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to be here talking to you about Dharma. My name, Anagha, was given to be by my grandmother, my dadi, who was very well read. And I understand that my name occurs three times in Gita, in the third chapter, 14th, and the 15th chapter. So I'm going to recite the 15th, 20th verse, since I know 15th chapter by heart. So it goes like this. Iti guhyatamam shastramiti muktam mayanagha etad budhva buddhimansa krutakrutasya bharata. So this is the last verse in the 15th chapter. And here, Anag is the name given by Krishna to Arjun, which means sinless or pure. So if you look at just the word Anag, Agha means impure. And by adding a na, the word is, it's a negation. And the female form of Anag is referred to as Anagha. I recently found out that there is an entire stotra dedicated to Anagha Devi. So I'm still finding the meaning of my word name as I get older.
Now, Anagha, can you tell us more about how you learned about Hinduism while growing up in India during your school and college days?
I grew up in Maharashtrian family in Indore. I lived in a three-generational household with values for education in Indian culture. And I think that three-generational household impacted my development significantly. There was less emphasis on rituals as I was growing up, and that's what I remember. My grandparents' role was significant as a little kid. There was a lot of Gita recitation, Dasbodh, Gyaneshwari. I used to go with my grandma, my dadi, to listen to Kirtankars. The Kirtankars are people who sing and tell the stories of Mahabharata and Ramayana, Gita, and they have a beautiful way to tell the stories while singing couplets and then telling the meaning of it. Also, Bhakti Sangeet was a very central part for any celebration. My Nanaji's side, my Mama and Mami, Mossies were all very good singers, including my mom. And so any, Janmashtami or Ram Navami, there was a lot of music in the family. And so, you know, the festivals, the celebrations were a little bit different than the other traditional Hindu families, but there was a lot of emphasis that was given to scriptures and the meaning behind those scriptures. My maternal grandfather, Nanaji, he taught me Gita. So I still recite 15th Adhyay very regularly. And, after my father's passing a year ago, my favorite shloka right now is from chapter 2, which is Najayate Mriyate Va Kadachin Nayam Bhutva Bhavita Vanabhuya Ajo Nityaha Shashvatoyam Purano Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. Which means that, Atma is not born, nor does it ever die. We have many other shlokas which talk about Atma, but basically Atma is unborn, it's ancient. It cannot be killed after the body dies. And after losing my father, this shlok has helped me to recover from the loss. Another very favorite shloka of mine is from chapter 12. So, you know, in my family, 12th and 15th adhyay were recited quite often. The 12th is the Bhakti Yoga and 15th is the Purushottam Yoga. So Purushottam Yoga is like embedded, you know, you have to say it all the time. But the 12th, the Bhakti Yoga, this is my favorite verse. Maya Veshya Mano Ye Maam Nitya Yukta Upasate Shraddhaya Parayo Petaha Te Me Yukta Tamamataha, which means that those who concentrate their minds on Bhagwan, and with full faith they seek him, they are dear to him. So when I say him, you know, this is Bhagwan Uvacha. So Krishna is saying that if you concentrate your mind on me, and if you have full faith in me, if you are seeking me, then you are dear to me. And I think that verse is also very important. I saw my grandfather, my dadaji, literally live Gita. He practiced yoga and pranayama and imbibed preachings of Gita in his daily life. And he passed away at the age of 91 with no ailments. He had a huge impact on me. And after he passed away is when I started practicing meditation at the age of 19. And I still do it. So, you know, I feel my grandparents had a huge impact on me. And then, of course, my parents, you know, they both took voluntary retirement. They dedicated their life to yoga. They went to villages teaching yoga in BSF, the Border Security Force camps. And they held yoga workshops even in many US cities, all free of charge. They both studied Gita and Das both and gave exams. So I think the scriptures, the Adhyatma was an embedded part of my life growing up.
Wonderful. And then Anika, you moved to US for graduate school. Can you tell us how different the practice of Hinduism was for you while in grad school? And how did earlier understanding of the scriptures help you in your stay during the graduate school?
You know, I came as a student to US in 1995, January. There was a big cultural shock. I was 22 years old. You know, quite young to understand the different culture that exists in US. You know, we didn't have that time the kind of, you know, telecommunication that we have now. And I feel like, you know, Gita or Atharva Shirsha or Ram Raksha Stotra recitation, as well as daily meditation practice, it helped me to boost my confidence. I moved in as a paying guest with a Maharashtrian family after maybe 3 weeks being in US. And again, I think this was God's grace that I found this family. I was living in the suburbs of LA while pursuing my master's. The Marathi family, they provided me with the continued Marathi culture and traditions that helped me to absorb the shocks of being alone. You know, I was doing like 3 to 4 jobs during the day. I had my classes during the day as well as some in the evening. And when I used to walk back home daily in the night at 10 p.m., it was a good 25 minute or more walk. I used to recite my shloka, especially Gita 15th adhyay, 15th adhyay. And it acted like a kavach, you know, it was like a protection around me. It gave me a lot of confidence that I was safe. You know, this is LA suburb, so it wasn't, you know, an easy place, right? I was always on the lookout of cops' cars since I knew that that was the time of the change of duty for the cops. And, you know, I strongly feel that the 1 year that while as a student, I was scrambling with graduate classes and 3 to 4 jobs on campus to support my financials, the hardships of a grad student and, you know, how emotionally you're vulnerable being alone for the first time. I think the foundation of samskaras that my family gave that helped me to overcome all those barriers, that kept me focused on my goal, and it gave me the strength to make the right decisions, which was very important at that time. You know, whether this is right or this is wrong, or choosing the friends, who do you decide is the right person that you can rely on? And I think it helped me significantly.
Yeah, you point out something very important that all of us need to do. That is, if there are particularly female, but also male students in the colleges around here, we should start doing this host family-like program so that they have something to fall back on when there is a need. And so I wonder how we can do that, and we should think about doing that.
Absolutely.
But the next issue is that once you finished college, you then got married and had kids. I know you have two wonderful sons. And so raising them as Hindu children was clearly a challenge. So how did you cope with that?
We lived in Purdue University prior to we moved to Chapel Hill. And Purdue is a very small town with a very smaller, actually, Indian population. My husband is a faculty. So he was a faculty at Purdue. We made the decision to continue the tradition of three-generational household. And I think that was a very important decision. My husband also grew up in a three-generational household. And we both strongly felt that it gave both of us the value system that helped us to, be strong and be confident in our skin. And so having grandparents allowed my kids to have the Indian environment as they were growing up. You know, we didn't have to send our kids to daycare, given how hectic my job in the semiconductor industry was, and, you know, so was my husband's. At the same time, I made sure that both my kids, they learned to read and write Marathi language. They both attended the Marathi school, and my selfish interest was Marathi Devanagari script will allow them to even read Hindi, right? My oldest son, so I paint and sing a lot, and my oldest son has taken up the painting and the art from me, while my younger one is more into music. And that allowed my younger one also to read Hindi script and sing. He doesn't have to, translate the English, right? And the pronunciation now is so accurate that, I feel like he gets the music, or he understands the meaning of the song, which is very important. We celebrate Hindu festivals with a twist by involving the kids into all the festivals. So for instance, Dashera, every year I would ask my kids and their friends to come. And this was not just Indian, but any, race kids could come. And we would make a cereal box, 10 heads of Ravan. And then I would ask each kid to put one bad habit that they want to quit, that we would use the post-it to put on the cereal box. We would all decorate the faces. And then in the campfire in the backyard, we would burn the head of the Ravan. But the whole idea of burning the Dashera celebrating Dashera was not about killing Ravan, but it was about how do you get rid of your bad habits.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And similarly, Diwali, we celebrate Diwali with something called Diwali Pahat, where we do a music session of 2 hours. And, it ends with a gluten-free vegan food because my youngest son has very severe food allergies. But he's big into music, and Diwali Pahat is something that I grew up with in Indore. That, you wake up in the morning, you do a Bhyanga Snan, the early morning, take shower after oil massage and everything. And then you go and listen to music. And this is a classical music sessions. We modified a little bit, but we still stick to the classical regime. And it just is a beautiful feeling in the morning of Diwali. So, that is something that we celebrate. Similarly, Ganpati, for last 10, 15 years, I have been making biodegradable Ganesh from rice flour. And I taught it to my kids also. So we all make the rice flour Ganpati. And then the decoration, the aras that we make is out of Legos, because that's what both my boys are into. So for instance, last year we made Harry Potter theme. So kids made the entire Harry Potter set, and then they had their Ganesha sitting in between, or every year they have a new theme. And I think that gets the kids into, like, my kids now are teens, right? My older one is actually 21, but he still feels very involved, because it's not, like, I think it is from their perspective the celebration is happening. That has, I think, helped me, inculcate that Indian culture in them. Basically, it's like an experiential learning, involving the kids to celebrate the Indian festival. Also, I think it's important to teach the kids how to be confident in their own skin. So, you know, my oldest son, he's at Stanford right now, finishing up his undergrad and master's, and he still is a vegetarian, and he does not feel, he doesn't get bothered with the fact that he's vegetarian, because, you know, he's perfectly okay with the fact that he believes in not eating meat, you know. So I think our culture, our food, our music, everything, you know, we have to teach our kids that it's okay to be different, because diversity is what is valued these days also. I mean, even earlier. You know, in when I was raising my kids in Purdue as well as in Chapel Hill today, there are not many Indian kids their age, even their school here. We have a lot, bigger density of Indian population in Cary, Morrisville area, but unfortunately not here in Chapel Hill. But I felt like they were able to carry themselves very confidently, with whatever they were raised as. So I feel practicing equality rather than inferiority or superiority complex is very important. And when I say equality complexes, you should never feel that your culture is better, but at the same time, you should never feel that, my culture or my parents have an accent or something like that. No, I think everybody has an accent. Everybody has their own differences. And I think if we teach our kids how to embrace that, I think they'll be able to, get into the mainstream of American, very easily.
I think the ideas that you have provided here should be shared on a wider scale. I think this making biodegradable rice flour during Ganapati celebration. Have you participated in the Ganapati festival that we have at the Hindu Society of North Carolina?
Yes. In fact, my son usually sings in that, and I also have performed a few times. We definitely come for darshan every year.
But you have to teach kids about this biodegradable rice flour and things like that.
Oh, I would love to. I mean, it's very easy, and it's a lot of fun, because that's when the kids actually, I personally feel that, one good thing about our Hindu culture is it's forgiving. Nobody's going to say, why did you make Ganesh like this, And I think it is the creativity from inside that is coming out. So I feel it's a great way to expose kids to our values.
And also the Dasera thing that you mentioned, burning one bad habit, and the Diwali, gluten-free, all these are great ideas. And so we need to perhaps think about how to share these ideas with a lot more people.
I would love to, definitely.
And I stopped there for a minute because they told me that, if it is chopped up in multiple pieces rather than all at once. So I stopped there, and we can restart.